It's safe to say that if you listen to this show, you are either a restaurant owner or in the restaurant business, or you want to be in the restaurant food service business, right? If that's you, which we're assuming that it is, and you do not check out QSR and FSR magazine, either the print copy or online, then you are one step behind. Okay, I put my ego aside there. This is the place to start for all the breaking news regarding everything that's happening in the industry and on both the QSR and FSR side, right? Quick service and full service restaurants. Also, my next guest, Danny Klein, the editorial director of both QSR and FSR magazine. His LinkedIn is absolute fire, and it was such an awesome experience to get to talk to him and pick his brain a little bit. So pick up those copies. But maybe before you do, like definitely do it after this episode. I mean, you've already gone this far, right? Check out this episode with Danny Klein, the editorial director of QSR and FSR Magazine. Enjoy.
Order up.
Look, I'm a big believer that experience teaches. My goal with this show is to have guests to share their experience so that they can tell you what it's like, what they did right, and what they did wrong. And I'm going to share the same. Look, I'm not trying to regurgitate stuff you can find on the internet. I'm going to tell you how it really is and what it's really like to own your own place.
This is the National Restaurant Owners Podcast with your host, Kyle and Sarah.
This episode of the National Restaurant Owners Podcast is brought to you by Plate IQ, your accounts payable automation and expense management solution. As a restaurant owner, you know how important it is to stay on top of your bills. Plate IQ works with over 20,000 restaurants across the country, helping them manage and automate the full life cycle of the invoice process. Everything from general ledger coding up to and including bill payment. Plate IQ uses OCR. What's OCR, Kyle? I'm going to tell you. It's optical character recognition and deep machine learning to help eliminate manual data entry from the accounts payable process. With Plate IQ's vendor pay, you can seamlessly flow from invoice upload to paying your bills. That means you don't have to type it in. You scan it in and it does the rest of the work for you. How about that? Does that save you some time? Some headaches? With Plate IQ's vendor pay, you can also see what is due and when. Schedule payments via check, ACH, or Plate IQ card. Plus, you can even earn cash back. Yes, cash back on your invoices from over 180,000 vendors. I didn't even know there were that many vendors. That's amazing. Lastly, vendor pay is also for vendors. Keeping your vendors happy will give you leverage in negotiating your terms. Vendors participating in Plate IQ's vendor pay love it because on average, they get paid 25% faster. To learn more, head over to plateiq.com, hit request demo in the top right-hand corner, and when you're done and you love it and you're ready to sign up, mention that you heard all about Plate IQ on the National Restaurant Owners Podcast from Kyle and receive 25% off implementation. So here we are. Now we're recording and we are live. Guys, welcome back to the National Restaurant Owners Podcast. Today I'm joined by Danny Klein, the editorial director at QSR and FSR Magazine. Danny, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I did sense, though, just right there, a little bit of a southern accent, so I think you are. We were just talking about where you're originally from. No, okay, all right, checking. The original Brooklyn guy, I don't want to offend anybody.
You know, when I actually lived in Brooklyn, and I never had a Brooklyn accent, despite being born and raised there for 18 years. And when I lived there, people thought I was from the South.
Oh, because you didn't have the accent.
Yeah, or from somewhere that wasn't New York. But even now, I mean, I think I just don't sound like I'm from anywhere. Or maybe I do sound like I'm from the South. I have no idea.
No, that's funny because I grew up on Long Island, and everyone used to tell me in college, like, you don't have a Long Island accent. And I'm like, what is a Long Island accent? I don't know.
Yeah.
I went to my classes. Maybe that's what helped me enunciate. So, you know, I was talking about you before we got on, before we came on the air here about just kind of talking, shooting the shit, so to speak, about where restaurants have been, where they're going. You tell me, what's a great place to start?
I mean, it's a pretty loaded question.
It is 100%, 100% loaded.
Yeah. So, I mean, just yesterday, I had posted kind of this thing on LinkedIn about you know, drop some trends. I'm going to crowdsource this. And I'm sitting right now in like the 60 something comments that people have. And, you know, it's, I didn't expect that many because I promised to do an article with it. And I'm not going to include that much feedback, but it just goes to show you though. I mean, I've been writing these sort of prediction, you know, look ahead stories for, you know, going on a decade now. And they were pretty boring for about 7 years. And then of course the last few have been, what I think is kind of the overarching theme that I'm seeing now is that I think that the last couple years, you were sort of this tidal wave of innovation, you know, and you were really going into the calendar thinking, okay, we're going to see something maybe we haven't before, you know, or we're going to take virtual brands or one of these topics that were kind of on the table before this, but not really, and then watch them explode. But I think next year will be less so about that kind of flow of innovation and more about optimizing what's happened in the last couple of years and finding ways to make some of this stuff actually work, you know, and you know, taking maybe even a step back from kind of that torrent of the flashy type of things that you saw pop in there. And then now asking yourself, how do I actually make a restaurant that performs better? It's more efficient, you know, and of course, all of it is going to revolve around the labor side of it. I think that's settling to a degree. I think we're pretty familiar with the fact that there are not going to be as many people working inside a restaurant. So how much automation do you use seems to be a topic that keeps popping up. And then a lot of little things, you know, on the side, things like dynamic pricing. You know,
that's a good one.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, we keep exploring it. I've been working with, you know, my friend Sherry Kimes, who's a professor at Cornell, obviously a very intelligent person. To try to get behind what that means, you know, the rate fences and all these things that are a little bit above my head. But I think the key to that, to just kind of understand if you're thinking broadly, is, you know, there's something beyond this idea of just everything being more expensive. It's not going to work forever. And that's where we're headed.
Yeah. I mean, that's that dynamic pricing thing, I think, is an interesting place to start. I mean, what is, and I looked at your LinkedIn earlier, you're talking about when should they be adjusting pricing and, you know, should be hourly, monthly, weekly. What has been, you know, the higher level feedback on that? I mean, to me, it makes sense. Just maybe there's some concerns I would think about, like operationally. What are some of the things you're hearing in regards to that?
Yeah, it was funny the other day. Somebody said to me, "Isn't this just happy hour?"
Yeah, right.
You know? And the answer to that is yeah. That's kind of the concept, right? You know, there are brands out there do things like that where, you know, it's like you get one price at the bar, one price in the dining room, maybe a different price for off-premises. I mean, pretty much every brand in quick service is charging you more if you want to get delivery, you know, to either dissuade you from doing so or to get you to come direct, things like that. Or of course, just to protect the margins involved with having to pay the fees. But I think that the element of that is, and we keep getting a lot of feedback. I mean, part of what we're doing right now is taking an operator survey to even just ask them, what is dynamic pricing to you? Because it's a lot of different things. You know, maybe it changes by the time of day, it changes by the market, it changes by the restaurant type, you know, maybe you have a certain kind of build. So there's a lot of different things to it. I think for me, the most interesting part when Sherry talks about it usually is just this idea of making sure people perceive they're getting a good value.
Right.
You know, you see this in retail a lot. You'll be like, this is on sale, I'm going to buy it. And then you look a week later and you're like, wait a second, it was just on sale from a really expensive price that I was never going to pay anyway.
Right.
So restaurants do stuff like that, though. You know, it's not uncommon. And the question is, it's worked really well in retail. So what's the potential for it in restaurants now that you have so many value-focused brands who are having to charge more? You know, they don't have a choice. I think consumers sometimes lose sight of that. It's not like, you know, fast food is a greed-infested industry who's trying to upcharge. They just have to pay more in labor right now. They don't have a choice. So can they take, you know, menus and, you know, jimmy them, so to speak, so it looks like something's on sale?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of elements to it. And, you know, we'll definitely update with the survey because I'm interested to see what the operators think because they're definitely more on top of it than I am.
Yeah, I mean, it's what other choice do you have, right? Because you cut back portions. People gripe about that and keep prices the same. My only issue that I've seen is the unscrupulous groups that are sort of cutting down portions and raising the prices, right? Like trying to make their margins on that. But ultimately, I think, I mean, I don't know about you, but if they were like, look, you don't have to wait a dinner time for trying to get a reservation, and you might pay a different price at lunch if you don't want to be there when it's crowded or whatever, however they structure it. I think people, we have gotten accustomed to this value-based pricing with Amazon, right? Or convenience pricing. Like, hey, I'll pay more for these paper towels, but it means I don't have to get in my car and deal with the Target stuff.
Right, exactly. And I mean, there's so many restaurants out there right now who already do this and have been doing it for years. Like, if you go to a sushi restaurant and you get the lunch special, I mean, that's dynamic pricing.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe you're paying less money because the menu isn't as broad, or they're not offering the same things they offer at dinner. So, you know, so the question just though is, how do you do this in like quick service, right? And that's where, you know, things are probably going to change, and you'll see, you know, more ingenuity. I mean, I was at a Bojangles franchisee conference a couple months ago, you know, just speaking to them, and your point about portion sizes, I mean, that's something that was, they cannot do that.
No.
I mean, all the operators in the room, you know, when that came up, you know, we call it shrinkflation or whatever. The idea of giving a Bojangles customer less chicken is a death sentence, right?
Oh, so totally.
You're much better off just charging them more and trying to get that message across than you are to ever make them feel like they're cheated, because that's a value equation in quick service that you are very difficult to come back from.
Exactly. And once you feel like someone's trying to get over on you, you don't ever go back.
Right.
You lost the trust. And whenever you lose the trust, that's not a good thing, particularly in hospitality and food service.
Yeah.
Another thing that, you know, obviously the labor thing you touched on earlier and making things work with less staff. What are your thoughts on some of the technology? You know, restaurants have been inundated. They were typically or historically slow to adopt technology in the past. Where do you see tech going from here? Because there's just so much, and it's tough to sort of like navigate that landscape, I would say, for the average mom and pop, even for the established restaurateur.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes back to what I was saying before. I think we are at the point now where we stop getting inundated a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that what you're looking at now in terms of a lot of the technology is going to happen in the back of the house.
Yeah.
You know, and ways to just automate certain tasks that are, you know, taking up time or freeing up people to have essentially better jobs in a quick service restaurant. You know, there are a lot of things that happen in the back that people do not want to do. And that's one of the problems right now. It's like, okay, well, I can get a job a lot of places. I mean, job surfing right now is at an all-time high. You know, you see this kind of in the unemployment being low and the quit rate being high. You could go wherever you want, you know, because the employer has less control or power than they did, you know, a couple years ago. Maybe, you know, I see these superlatives like more than ever. I don't know if that's true. I'm not 100 years old, but but I do think that the employee, I mean, I see it now, you know, when we're hiring people, they just have more say than they did before. So if the job sucks, they'll just go to Amazon and pack boxes, you know. They don't need to be, you know, a lot of, like, you know, you see some of it with kind of, you know, robots and things and White Castle, and that's sort of an extreme, you know, side of it. But there are things just like smart ovens and all that kind of technology right now I hear a lot about in terms of, and scheduling technology, those kind of little things that really make the flow, you know, better and allow employees to focus on the things they want to do.
Yeah.
Like customer service. And then the other part too, I mean, kiosks, you know, it's been kind of interesting because they went through a phase there in COVID where they were kind of, you know, people were either going away from them, they didn't want to touch them. That became a technology that almost felt a little outdated, but they're coming back now. I mean, you've seen multiple chains going full on into them, from Shake Shack to Steak and Shake, and the self-ordering nature of, you know, the industry, and then to have employees who help guide the process versus, you know, being sort of cashiers and all that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll kind of see how it unfolds, because there's going to be pushback. I remember years ago, Shake Shack tried to get rid of cash at a location and people freaked out, you know, customer wasn't ready for it. I do think the customer's ready for kiosks. I mean, it's basically just a phone, you know, and then any kind of mobile technology that enables the ordering experience. But I will say your kind of last point on this is, you know, where I think the biggest friction right now resides is in trying to balance the in-store guest with your off-premise guest, because the person walking in the door feeling like they're being, you know, under-prioritized versus someone who ordered ahead is a real problem. I mean, we posted this story a few months ago, Wendy's had come out with a new prototype where they put the window on the front door for aggregators to come pick up.
Yep.
Which is great. It's a really smart idea. But the comments on that post, I had no idea people were so mad at Wendy's. You know, and they were mad at him about the idea. There was all these comments like, yeah, I'm glad you did this because last time I came in here, I had to stand there for 15 minutes while I watched you pack bags in the corner, you know, where the DoorDash driver pushed me out of line. And, you know, here I am. If I show up, I feel like you need to give me a priority. So that to me right now is where people are really hitting restaurants, because it is an issue for sure.
Yeah, I was still involved in a restaurant, not on day to day, but like as an investor. But during COVID, I work as a restaurant growth advisor, right? So we do real estate site selection for brands all across the country, and nobody was doing that during COVID. But I was invested in this little taqueria here in Westchester County, and we were busy. And it used to just annoy me where everyone's like, "Well, just start doing takeout." I'm like, you know, our kitchen is the size of a shoebox. It's not that easy. And then, you know, we became real pros at the takeout stuff. And then people started creeping back in. They were dining outside. Then we have a certain number of people inside. And we started getting used to it. It is awkward. You're watching boxes of tacos go past you, and you're waiting for your margarita, right? Like, it's not a comfortable situation. So I would imagine that there are a lot of restaurants in a similar spot. And I know some have put in, like, additional lines, right? You know, that's maybe why some ghost kitchens are handling some of the takeout stuff. But yeah, that it's not that easy just to transition to doing a ton of takeout. You need more space. You need more paper products. It's basically a whole other business, as we've seen.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, as a transplanted New Yorker, we go to, you know, Chinese food on New Year's Eve. Kind of.
There you go.
So we've got this place like right by my house, and this was, I guess, 2 years ago. So sort of during the heart of the pandemic. And we went in there, and the line for people to sit was, I mean, it was, the wait was like an hour. And the problem, and this, I had never seen this there before. And I asked them, you know, what was going on. And the problem, they couldn't throttle off the third party business they were getting, which was so much higher than it was pre-COVID. They just couldn't handle even taking the orders and then seating people. The hostess was so busy trying to just input, you know, the orders coming through the POS that she couldn't even say, "Hey, I got a table." And they ended up really, you know, destroying the in restaurant experience for all the people who showed up to sort of live this traditional thing. And the only reason for that was they just did not know how to turn it off, because they have figured it out since. But at the time, honestly, I don't even know if that technology and the system they had, it was even possible. And then you got to balance, like, do I turn it off? Like, do I prioritize my in-store people right now and don't get all this delivery come? Do I make people call in that case? The answer, in my opinion, was probably yes. They were better off just taking phone calls in that case than getting that flood of third-party delivery. But because you're taking 30% off the top, so.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It becomes like one of those awful algebra problems from like ninth grade. It was like, okay, it takes us, you know, on average, this is our ticket time. But, you know, the system that was doing the KDS or whoever was entering in, right, if it was a phone call, or back in the day when iPads were separate from the POS and they didn't talk to each other, you had to read from there and then put it in, which was a real whole other nightmare. But they would put, a half hour. Well, it's not a half hour now, pretty much, after the first two orders. Somebody's going to have to change it. I don't know if it's, is it 35 minutes, is it 45 minutes? But I think one of the best things that has started to happen is, I know Toast has done this, and this is not a pitch for Toast, but they sort of sense how long it's taking for you. So long as you're closing out checks and doing everything the right way, it's sort of like adjust for you, which makes life a little bit easier. So I think that's always a good example of technology being helpful. I mean, definitely in the QSR space, I can see that. But how do you see like full service restaurants implemented? I know you said back of the house. Are you referring to like inventory ordering type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, yes. I mean, full service is playing that game even more because they really need to lean into whatever their experience element was. And that usually in a full service environment starts with two things, one being the service that you get from whoever's working there. Yeah. And the other being the attention that you get, because that's, I mean, so if we dig deeper into this problem, you know, if you go to sit at a table, you know, in a full service restaurant, you know, they come to take your order and then you don't see them for 45 minutes. That's usually when you start looking, you know, you have that one angry uncle at the table who's going, have you seen the waiter? You know, like, I'm going to say something. And then everyone's like putting their head in their hands, like, please don't say anything. You know,
this is why I'm inviting Uncle Ted out to dinner.
Right. Yeah. I've been through that a million times. but that's why, you know, table checks and things. And what you see now, a lot of times, these handhelds, I was talking to Rom Krupp, he's the CEO of One Dine, you know, sort of, they do a lot of different things in terms of, and this again, it's not a pitch for One Dine, but what he had mentioned was just this idea that handhelds, you know, if he was kind of making a prediction within 5 years are going to be in most full service chain restaurants across America and a lot of the independents, because what it allows you to do, and you see this now with the labor, is maybe you don't have as many servers, but you have more runners. So you get, so they're sitting there with the handheld, take the drink, or runners runs the drink over before they're done with the table. And then you can just keep getting drinks kind of in the process of as you're waiting, and feels a lot more hospitable than, again, if you put in an order and then they get stacked and then you look over to your right and there's 25 bags being bagged up by somebody on staff or, you know, couriers coming in the door. So, you know, if we're all paying more money for this experience, which we are, especially in full service, where, you know, you're not trading convenience off at the same sort of element, then yeah, you've got to get some of these things right, and technology can help you. I think handhelds, to me, they make a lot of sense. You know, especially for, you know, the servers, if they're sitting there and they've got the menu in front of them on the handheld itself, you want them to upsell, you want them to know what's happening, and you don't maybe have the ability to train them into tenured employees because you're flipping over the staff so often. That handheld's really helpful because they don't have to learn as much. Oh, you know, they could just sit there and go, hey, you know, this is on special, look down. Yeah, I know I'm on like audio, but I'm looking at, you know, you look down at the menu on the handheld and they can just, you know, whatever you want them to say, you could just put it in there, and they of course can then check out. And it's just a, one thing I will say about full service, you know, people do like QR codes and things like that. They had some kickback in early days of like, I missed the menu or whatever. But one thing I've never heard anybody say is I miss handing my credit card to the server. So, any way to get around that now, I think is pretty welcomed by people to check out on their own time frame.
Yeah. I mean, I have made the argument previously that the maybe not the handheld, but like the QR code ordering from your phone, Bar Taco does it over here. And you can make the argument if they're executing on it properly, it gives you a little bit more of an opportunity as the server or manager to provide hospitality, because you're not so caught up spending that time writing things down or punching them in and all that stuff. Is that something you're a fan of, those QR codes at the menu? Like, I think they work for some concepts pretty well.
Yeah, I think it depends on the concept. Bar Taco is like the gold standard of that. Yeah. I think they were an early adopter, and their CEO, Scott, is just a really smart guy. But I mean, they've, to your point, the way that they've almost set it up is like you're using the QR code, you know, ordering process on your phone, but they have what feels like an army of employees walking around. So they're either helping you or they're asking you if you need something else or bringing you water or bringing the drinks and all these type of things. So it feels, you know, you don't lose a lot in the experience compared to how it used to be there. And also, you know, pre-QR code at Bar Taco, they had these like checklist pieces of paper, like a sushi spot.
Yep.
So for them, it made a lot of sense because it was like a better version of kind of how their model already was. And it also enabled them to pay more, you know, consistently wages to employees, because they just put everyone on the same scale. You know, they got rid of, you know, servers make tips, and now they just pool it, and it makes for a different type of recruiting process.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Now, do I think that works for everybody? No.
No.
Because what ends up happening in a lot of concepts, I've been to these. Again, it's like the angry uncle. Although in this case, it's more like the angry like grandfather or father-in-law in my case. But
oh, yeah.
You know, you sit down and it's like, okay, there's no one here to help me. Do I scan this with my phone? You know, and I've been in scenarios like that where then you get to the end and the person I'm with is like, am I really supposed to tip them? They didn't do anything.
Bro, yeah. Yep, that's, you know, a good another conversation.
Or I remember being here in the past, you know, and I think QR codes need to definitely get better at how they showcase the menus, you know, beyond the PDF to something more engaging and easy to navigate and to actually see what's there. But again, I think choice is very important for people in a lot of full service concepts. Again, Bar Taco to me is a little bit of a different case because they're kind of almost like a hybrid, but it depends is the way that I would answer.
Yeah.
But I think you have to take the pulse of what people want to do. You know, I talked to True Food Kitchen about this and it made sense for them at lunch, but not at dinner, right? Because the dinner customer was staying, you know, wanted to stay there an hour. They knew their check average was $45 or whatever. And to them, going off a QR code for that journey, you know, didn't balance out. So
that's interesting.
It depends. Yeah. It depends.
No, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, I know the grumpy father-in-law, you know, the line that you hear all the time is, you know, I'm doing your job now. You know, kind of like checking out at the supermarket. And I can sort of understand it, but at the end of the day, right, if you're not sacrificing the experience, I mean, we're a tip culture. I mean, where do you fall on that? I mean, I've heard jokes made before, like, oh, you know, if I walk into a place with iPads, you know, it could be a coffee shop, it could be a dry cleaner, it could be whatever, you're going to get that awkward screen turnaround and they walk away, act like they have to organize something and come back and hope there's 18 to 20% there. What do you think about the tip situation given this whole change in technology and serving?
Yeah, I mean, it is legitimately interesting. I personally always tip just because I consider myself as someone who works in the industry, even though I also acknowledge the fact that I don't work in a restaurant.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, you know, I think where I often find it kind of the most questionable is if I'm mobile ordering ahead for pickup.
Yes.
You know, and then I'm like, okay, well, I only spent like $4, say I'm getting coffee or whatever. Do I want to tip 15%? Like, and it comes up on the screen and it's like 70 cents. And that to me is a little interesting. And I think if I were not someone who wrote about and lived, you know, this industry every day, I may not do. But if I go somewhere and I sit down, I don't really see why you wouldn't tip, because you have to understand there's still people in the back, you know, helping.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, what is this kind of what my father-in-law said is that you can't scale the tip based on what you experience in that case. So you feel less power over it. And that bothered him. Does that bother me? Yeah, I mean, if I like the food, I guess I look at it that way. But I got what he was saying, you know, because to him, dining out was always, and by the way, there's no chance he's going to listen to this. But
I'm going to send it to him.
Yeah. Oh, God. But, you know, the idea in the past was that, you know, he might like semi-flirt with the person, whatever it might be. Like they had a good conversation and then he felt like, okay,
totally.
I'm going to tip you. Like I'm awesome. You know, whether or not they roll their eyes at it, but that was part of the experience of dining out. So you do lose that a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're seeing.
It's that, totally. My dad is a big, you know, the waitress comes over, and usually only the waitress, right? No chance my dad misses either. We'll say, you know, she'll say, oh, the specials are this, or, you know, can I get you guys something to drink? He'll be like, oh, you're nice. What's your name? You know, like, because now he wants to leverage the name thing. And now that he can't do that, I can sense that he's off his game a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, it's the times are changing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I went to somewhere and he was just like, why did you bring me here? And I was like, it's still the same place. Like, I get, but you know.
You know. I think, were you trying to say thank you? Because you said thank you wrong.
Right.
That's so interesting. Yeah, the whole other show. I was looking at your LinkedIn again. I have some notes here. And one thing that stood out to me as a real estate guy is is the Dave's Hot Chicken story, right? Like the comments you have here about having, you know, a couple handful of locations prior to 2021, and then 620 units in development, and 85 restaurants are expected to debut globally in 2023. Yeah. What do you think? Like, what do you attribute that to? Just leadership, vision? What is that about? I mean, the fried chicken thing is everywhere. I mean, what do you think led to this? I mean, it's for expansion.
I posted that because they're our breakout brand of the year, which we do every year in January. Mm. So I was actually just editing that story a minute ago. It's written by my colleague, Ben. The one thing that's interesting about that is that we hear stuff like that all the time, as I'm sure you do too, mm-hmm. where brands like, we're going to hit X locations by X date, and it, you know, usually doesn't happen. But they're already up to 100 units. So they're not blowing smoke, you know, in terms of, you know, what they're talking about, because one thing that they're doing that a lot of people don't when they say these things is they're actually opening these restaurants. So, you know, they're getting them open versus just signing the agreements. So I would bear on the side of believing that they'll hit close to what they have targeted. Now, why did that happen? I mean, you know, it always helps to have really good investors, and someone like Bill Felch, who has a ton of industry experience, you know, and they really took, you know, it's a very common growth formula where you have a brand that blows up locally, someone discovers it, and then you back end it with infrastructure of a much larger chain, and then sort of let it grow from there on the franchise side. But that usually doesn't actually work because something either gets in the way. But for them, it's just clicking. So I think, you know, I think it's a combination. They've got really good tech stack. They've got a great brand. You know, the interiors are very cool. The food is supposedly very good. I've not eaten there. But more than anything, I just think that the people who are currently running that from the top down are franchising the right way. You know, they're not overselling the product or the, you know, ROI or the brand itself. And that's usually what happens to actually stem growth that's sustainable, is that the people in the unit level economics start making money. You know, because you could have the best brand in all these things in food, but if the first, you know, batch of franchisees don't make money, they're not going to open another one. You know, that's one of the great things about franchising. It's such a, you know, when it works right, it's very, you know, led by entrepreneurs and word of mouth and that kind of stuff. You know, you can only hide so much behind it if you're not making money again. So I think it's all those things, right? And really, it's mostly the leadership and it's the development. And they spent a lot of time putting together, a footprint and a concept and technology that is ready to go. So it's pretty turnkey. You know, but beyond that, I mean, I don't have the answer. If I did, everybody would be opening Dave's Hot Chickens, you know, so
I'm just hitting you with these loaded questions just because, you know, it's, you know, I'm a former chef, restaurant owner, the whole deal. And I just, you know, for so long I was about the food. And I didn't really get involved in the, you know, the franchise world until I stepped into the world of real estate about 6 years ago. And I was like, what the hell was I doing? Like, why am I wasting my time? Nobody cares if this was my personal chicken. I raised it. I massage it every day. It's battered in organic buttermilk and panko bread, whatever the hell it is. Nobody cares. I think this is a lesson in really, like, give people what they want, right? Like, and also, like, this is a good franchise. You know, make sure you're investing in the right franchise that can deliver, because they all cannot produce like that. As most people know, but I just think those are staggering numbers to look at.
They're claiming they're the fastest growing franchise in history. I have no baseline to tell them if that's right or wrong, but it might very well be true. What I'll say is that, you know, in terms of our breakout brand of the year, they were a remarkably easy pick. The third one we've done, Slim Chickens was last year. So that's another one that's growing incredibly fast, and also chicken.
I was just going to say, sensing a theme here. What was the other one?
BurgerFi, I believe, was the first one we did right before they went public. Yeah, and they've had their ups and downs. Yeah. But, you know, and I think that was the first one. I can't remember. My brain is scrambled. We also do transformational brands of the year at the same time in January. So
it's tough to remember which was which. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be Jack in the Box, by the way. A little sneak peek.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, that's so funny because I have been seeing their name more and more, and I'm like, how are these guys still around? I mean, no offense to anybody from Jack in the Box, but like what I remember from Jack in the Box was not much. I mean, I grew up on Long Island. There wasn't many. There was maybe one that I knew of.
I didn't know of it until I moved down here. I had not heard of it in New York, but yeah. But they're doing a lot of things. I mean, yeah, it's kind of. I guess that's sort of the story is what you just said is that people are saying, well, you know, where have they been? And now they're kind of reemerging. And that's sort of what's happening. New prototype, you know, these drive-through only off-premise units. And yeah, they're going to have growth for the first time in 3 years.
Amazing. Wow, that's a testament too. Ride that whole thing out and come out the other side. So, and be growing. All right, so we're basically at the end of the show here. And I always like to end with three questions for everybody. I'm sort of in the hot seat here. So hope All right. You're ready. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. You need to crack your knuckles. I think sometimes people crack their knuckles.
I hate that stuff.
All right. Hand
cracking bothers me. I don't know why. Everything else is fine.
All right. Anyway. What restaurant do you go to on your day off? You want to just, you know, it depends on your vibe. I totally understand. But let's just say, 66% of the time, where are you going?
I go to Cava a lot.
Oh.
There's one right by our office, and I'm probably so Cava and Caribou Coffee are like the things that I'm spending the most.
Interesting.
Yeah, those are kind of my two apps that I tap the most in terms of rewards programs.
That's interesting because Cava in Manhattan is very successful, but there's one here in Greenwich, Connecticut that is not so successful. But I've never really had a great experience, but people love it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to figure out what you like there. Yeah. And once you figure, because the first couple of times I went, the bowls that I made were not good. You know, then they came out with the curated bowls, which was helpful. But now I have like a go-to kind of thing that, you know, I can just keep tapping.
What is it? I'm going to try it. What is it? What's your go-to bowl?
So I do the harissa hot chicken, chicken.
Okay.
Half that, half veggies. Greens and grains, so then it's like splendid greens, which is I'm not exactly sure what that is, and then brown rice, and then toppings wise, it's crazy. I know this, but harissa, tzatziki, red pepper, hummus, and then it's that coleslaw stuff they do.
Wow,
corn. Oh god, the tomato and cucumber, and I think that's it. And then I do the green dressing, which is the skug or however you pronounce that. So
that sounds pretty solid.
It's, you know, and it's good. It's pretty healthy, relatively speaking, you know, so you don't feel like you got something really bad for it. Because I also love Jersey Mike's, but like I have to sort of temper how often I go there because of what I'm getting. But, you know, we actually, you know, we don't have a ton of like quick serves over where I live because there's a drive-through ordinance where you can't open one.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to actually drive to another county to get most of the quick service around here. So we only have like four.
That's interesting. That's a lot. Zoning, that's another old show, zoning for different types of use.
I know. I talked to Chipotle about that once, this very market, and they're like, we're not opening drive-thrus, and we need to get them to understand this is a different model. But again, that's a leave that to your real estate world to fight that battle. Yeah,
that's a lot of regulatory topics in that. All right, so now here's another one. The last two are a little bit more SAT-ish. That was a little warm-up one.
All right.
If you and I were traveling, like in a city, where you know, anywhere in the world, and we didn't have our cell phones, and I lost you. What kind of restaurant would I find you in, just kind of hanging out? Like, hey, he'll find me. He'll know I'll be here.
Probably like a cafe. I like. I'm just picturing us in Europe for some reason.
I always think Europe. Yeah, I'm not walking around Charlotte. Yeah, right.
I really like. Back before I had children, and I actually went to restaurants. I like small plate dining or meals that. have kind of little things with a lot of different flavors happening. So like I like sitting there, and if I have like a little coffee and then small plates coming out, I prefer that over sort of just one big entree. I'll typically, you know, back when I actually used to dine out again, you know, with my wife, we always, I'm more of the type that we would order like four or five things and share them versus, you know, I get like the giant steak. So yeah, anywhere like that, I guess you might just find me like sitting in a cafe.
Like in Barcelona, having a couple of tapas and like a gin and tonic. Okay. All right.
I was in California, Napa, a few months ago, and I was in this bar, and they had no service inside, and so, like, I couldn't use my phone, and it was, I mean, it was a weird hour. Like, I had to talk to people, you know, this this guy, you know, this one guy was really obnoxious. He was doing like trivia of everybody, asking them these ridiculous questions about nonsense. You know, and he owned the winery. Like he was, I guess, a big deal, at least in his own. But then he would say to people, he'd say this. So everyone kept having, I guess people would walk in and be like, oh crap, I got to talk to someone. Then there's this really talkative guy. And so at one point, you know, he'd say the same joke to everyone where he'd go, okay, well, where do you think I used to work? And they'd be like, I don't know. And he'd say, it was a fruit company. And they'd be like, okay, what was that? And he'd just say, this small place called Apple. And then we'd all be like, oh, God. So it made me lose some of my faith in the human reconnection.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, give me the kiosk. Give me the wine kiosk. I don't want to have to hear it.
I was thinking, was sitting in the corner by myself with my phone really so sad?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, need to talk to this guy at all.
Looking pretty good right now. Oh, that's amazing. And just, you know, when I hear that, those corny, like, jokes, and I actually like those dad jokes, but that's a pretty bad one. I just think how many times a day must, or years, like I thought.
I like dad jokes too, but this was like a braggart dad joke, which just hard to get around, because I don't think he was dad joking. He just thought he was awesome, you know, but whatever.
No, I'm not joking. I'm just an asshole. No, yeah, that's all right. All right, last question. So one meal, three people, alive, dead, real or fiction, who would they be and where would you eat?
I guess I'll start with the people.
Okay.
So I think I would eat with, just trying to think, I would eat with Derek Jeter.
Yeah, nice.
Tupac. Because why not? who would be the third? Those are just like when I was growing up, those were my two favorite people. Can't explain why.
Coming from Brooklyn, I'm surprised you didn't say Biggie.
I mean, that's probably why I like Tupac. I think I was trying to go against the grain at that age.
Yeah.
And he also tapped more into my emo feelings as a teenager.
Yeah. He's a poet.
You know, let's just throw Einstein in there. Not because I think he's really cool, but I just think those three people together would be pretty interesting.
Might have a lot to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Because I can't think of a third person right now. But
so Einstein, Jeter, and Tupac.
Yeah, I bet you haven't had anybody say that.
I don't think any one of those guys have made the list yet so far. I mean, surprisingly, that trio has not come up, and definitely not together. I'll say that. So,
yeah.
Well, Dan, thank you so much. What do you want to leave the folks with? I generally say, where can people find you? But we know where we can find you. You're a superstar on LinkedIn. I love everything that you post there. What's the best way for people to stay in tune with what's going on in the world of restaurants?
Yeah, social media wise, that's the only network I'm on. I don't play in that Twitter sandbox for many reasons. I used to in my sports writing days, and I just have no interest in going back. But yeah, but in terms of our publications themselves, you know, they're totally free to anyone who works in the restaurant industry, whether you want the print or the digital, anybody could get, you know, in terms of like signing up for our free e-letters, which we send 9 of them a week, one each day for each publication, except Friday for our full service pub. But yeah, if you're in the restaurant industry, please sign up, you know, get a subscription. We'll mail it to you for free, and we'll send you all the different things we do digitally also for free. So that is pretty much the best way I could think of. QSR and FSR Magazine, both websites are the name, so they're very easy to find. And personally, again, just LinkedIn. I try to be responsive on there, unless you're psycho. So a lot of people are.
Psychos on social media, is that a thing?
You know, LinkedIn, when I first started using it, didn't seem like there were a lot of them, but they have emerged in the...
they found their way over.
Well, I think Facebook really kind of going to the ants of the world, as I like to say.
Yeah. You know,
I think that people now are headed from that world into LinkedIn, you know,
yeah.
So you get a little bit more trolls than maybe you did 5 years ago, but yeah. Whatever, it's all good. We embrace all engagement.
Drive the conversation. Yeah.
Block button is for.
There you go. And look, guys, if you're listening to this show and you're not subscribed to FSR and QSR, you missed a step. Go back. You should be there first. So, Danny, thank you so much for the time. And, next time you're up in Brooklyn, give me a shout. We can go to small plates.
Yeah, my mom's about to sell her apartment. If you're listening to this and you want to buy a...
there you go.
I think she's going to list it within the next, 2 weeks in Brooklyn Heights, you know. So
I might know a realtor that can help her, so. awesome. Well, again, thanks so much, and look forward to all the lists you have coming out and more about that Dave Hot Chicken story.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you having me.
All right, take care.
Thank you for checking out another episode of the National Restaurant Owners Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you'd like to help support the show, share it with your friends. Share it with your restaurant buddies. Share it with your people who want to be restaurant people. That'd be great. And you could post on your social too. We would love that. Tag us. We'll share it in kind, right? That's what they say. We'll share it in kind. So you share and we'll share it. And if it's not too much to ask, one other little thing or two other little things, if you could leave us a rating and review, we'd really appreciate it. Because that's what kind of bumps us up and makes us, you know, more visible to other restaurant folks who are looking for us. So that'd be great. To catch all the latest from me personally, you can follow me on Instagram at Kyle and Sarah. Also at Kyle and Sarah on Twitter and on TikTok and LinkedIn. So that's great. If you want to follow the show, it's at restaurant_owners_podcast on Instagram. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.